You're watching Meet the Movie Press, and coming up, we're going to be talking about James Bond, Jordan Peele, and Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume Dose.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Meet the Movie Press.
Hello.
And then morning, Simon.
All right, mate, you sound like you're from London.
How are you, buddy?
I'm good. It's nice to be back. I missed you last
week. Good to have you back. My name is Jeff Snyder. You are watching Meet the Movie Press. I'm the editor-in-chief of the Tracking Board, tracking-board.com. and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at The Insider. With me, as always,
it's Simon Thompson. Hello there. Some people are happy to see me back. Not everybody, but...
Yeah, that one guy in the comment section. Screw that guy.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
Hey, we love Brienne Chandler around here. Thank you to...
Lovely to have her on. I watched the show.
Yeah, thanks, Brienne, for filling in. But awesome. Simon has returned.
Hey, you've got to up the bald quota. If you want to see more of my bald head, or I think it was an egg head, someone called it this week, you could find me on Twitter, at ShowbizSimon, Instagram, at ShowbizSimon. I also have a Facebook page. This is Simon Thompson.
Wonderful.
A lot going on this week.
Yeah, I guess. It was a busy week. Yeah. And we averted a crisis.
We did. Right, a strike.
Yep.
Over.
I was up late that night.
Yeah,
I think
can imagine.
It was like, you know, 1 a.m. when the white smoke came out of the headquarters or the, wherever the hell they
the
were negotiating.
Pope.
Right. And
they
reached a deal. So good for the writers.
Because genuinely thought there was going to be a strike. It looked very likely.
I know. I was on the show predicting that there wasn't going to be a strike. Mm. I thought that they lost a lot last go around, and it really hurt Hollywood and the California economy, and I just didn't see what they had to gain necessarily by striking.
Michael Bay had a couple of movies that he could have got greenlit without scripts.
Sure. So they got the health insurance fixed. That was a big problem for the writers.
Big deal right now.
They made some incremental gains on the TV side. I mean, if you're a screenwriter, you know, it didn't really affect you that much, the new deal, but TV writers, you know, that was really the big issue on the table.
Sure.
I'm glad that things can move on because God knows what we would have been subjected to.
Strikes in the past have never really worked out well creativity wise.
No.
For audiences. I mean, they've still gone and seen the movies, but it hasn't really worked out well for audiences. So, you okay?
Yeah, no, I saw this thing swinging back there. I thought it was a spider.
I know you don't like spiders.
You'd have to kill it for me,
Simon. Okay. Don't worry, I've got this.
So, WGA AMPTP, congrats to them. And now we can talk about the real deal movie stuff.
Let's talk about it.
And the thing that everybody was talking about this week, for whether there was reason to or not, was the James Bond franchise.
Yeah.
Rumors stemming from Syncopy. Or Syncopy, or however the fuck you're pronouncing Christopher Nolan's production company name. They were listed on IMDb as the production company for Bond 25, and people took this as some sort of confirmation that Christopher Nolan was in fact involved in the movie. We also got rumors that Paul McGuigan could be directing.
Yeah, who made, probably best known for Lucky Number 11.
Yeah, which
I
says a lot.
I didn't like. I mean, it would be interesting if they do take it down and indie director route.
And he did Push, right? With Chris
and
Evans.
And he's done some Sherlock.
Did he do I, Frankenstein? Or, I don't know about that one. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. He did.
But he's certainly not
like
a...
Or maybe he just did Frankenstein. Or
Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah, he did that, I think.
Yeah, that was... what the fuck, Frankenstein?
Anyways, these are not great movies. No. I don't know where Paul McGuigan's name came out of.
I don't know who he's
done a lot of good work on television, but I would be shocked if he got the job.
I would be very surprised.
And I know that the Broccoli family, they have gone the indie route before with Mark Forster.
Yeah.
But again, how well did that really work out?
But again, Quantum of Solace, I mean, it's a Bond film that is not the best Bond film by any stretch, but I actually quite enjoyed it. But again, that was a film that was affected by a strike.
Right. Yeah,
so
you're right.
You can't entirely lay the blame at his feet as the director.
No.
But it hasn't worked out well.
Yeah. But let's get into like the Chris Nolan, Tom Hardy of it
all. Sure, yeah.
Could there... I mean, do you... I know that Chris Nolan is a huge Bond fan.
Yeah.
He grew up watching those movies.
Yeah.
It makes sense that he would do one of them, but did you interpret that IMDb listing as, like, legitimate, or is this all, you know...
No, I mean, if you take that as an example of a well-known director who has a production company that is linked to making a movie, how many times do the likes of Brad Pitt, when his production company gets attached to a movie, doesn't necessarily mean that Brad Pitt's going to direct it. I wouldn't read too much into that. I mean, I would be very open.
You think they could potentially be producing Chris and Emma, but not he won't necessarily direct? Like, it's just like a...
Yeah, I think that would be an option.
Creative imprint?
Yeah, I mean, just because your production company is attached doesn't mean you have to direct. I mean, Reese Witherspoon, again, production company, she hasn't directed all the movies that have been attached to that company. I mean, I would be very, very open to Chris Nolan.
She's not a director, she produces.
Yeah. But
I think that if...
I'd be open to it.
If he was
idea.
Producing the movie, he would be directing it. That's what I think.
I think he'd... Yeah, I mean, I would assume that would go hand in hand, but I wouldn't necessarily take that as a given. I mean, we have the likes of Ridley Scott, who produces a lot of movies but doesn't necessarily direct them, mm-hmm. which he very ably could direct.
See,
a lot of the stuff
I think actually, you know, as far as like, because the directors who come on to this franchise, I don't think that they necessarily do bring their whole production companies. Like, I don't know if Sam Mendes is Paper or Street. Or whatever it is.
No, but there's no hard and fast.
I don't know if that was a production company on it. I think that Chris Nolan and Ridley Scott are actually two of the only directors who would get that kind of benefit.
Yeah. But I think Bond in itself as a film and as a franchise is a very unique entity. So I think really when you're entering into the Bond universe, kind of, you know, the writing's on the wall, to quote Sam. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that all... Thank you so much. It doesn't mean the rules apply. I think it's kind of like everything is out the window. It's a different ball game, the Bond stuff.
So the thing about Bond, okay, so there is no director.
Yeah.
They are having they are working on a script. It's the guys who have written the last few. There's still no studio. The last we heard, you know, the New York Times had that big story with all the different studios making their presentations.
Or 3 weeks ago,
Right, we haven't heard any follow-up since. And then there's the talk of casting.
Yeah.
So I think that they've got a good thing going with Daniel Craig.
Yep.
And if he wants to come back, they would gladly have him back for one more movie.
Yeah, I think that's true.
But let's say they just are like, you know, we're ready to move on. Mm-hmm. We're ready to reboot the franchise with this new studio and a new director.
Yeah.
Let's recast. You know, given the Nolan stuff that was in the news, there was speculation about Tom Hardy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually reading The Ankler, which I've told everyone
great
to
newsletter.
Subscribe to, Richard
yes,
Rushfield's
great newsletter.
And in his newsletter, he links to an IndieWire story where Ann Thompson's talking about whether Tom Hardy would do it. And he says that he hears that the rumor about Tom Hardy playing James Bond is actually more than a rumor, and that it's a done deal.
Okay.
And I wouldn't put it past CAA to have struck that deal. I think Tom Hardy is in high demand. He doesn't do a lot of these franchise titles.
Yep.
I mean, Dunkirk is obviously a huge movie, but it's not, you know, a branded sort of IP.
And if Nolan's going to come on board as director, if that is on the table,
right,
then obviously that would make perfect sense. So,
But I do think that there could be some sort of like side deal or whisper deal for Tom Hardy, where he's like, listen, Daniel Craig is our Bond as long as he wants to be, but once he is not, you're the guy. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah.
And I think that would be great.
I would be very much on board with that.
He's a brilliant actor.
Yeah, I mean, like I said previously, I think Daniel Craig is... I mean, I've really enjoyed him as Bond. I think he's been great, but I think that has kind of, for me, as an audience member, that's kind of closure with the last film.
Yeah,
if he didn't come back, I wouldn't have an issue with that.
I agree.
I would welcome him back.
I think it's time.
But I think it's time. I think it's time to move on.
I agree.
I think Tom Hardy's a really good... would be a really good choice.
I don't think there's actually a lot of other choices. When I survey the landscape, or I think of all the names who have been rumored for Bond, people like Jack Houston or Idris Elba.
That's not going to happen.
I don't see it.
Kevin Hart.
A real quick aside, since I just name checked Idris Elba, did you see that Dark Tower trailer this week?
I did.
What do you think of this movie?
Do you know what? I'm looking forward to it. That trailer didn't really do it for me.
No.
It felt a little bit like The Last Action Hero. It felt too much like a kid on an adventure type movie that we used to see in the 80s and 90s. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm absolutely going to go and see this film. I am looking forward to it. That trailer just did not...
I'm going to see this movie too, because this is considered King's masterwork.
Yeah.
But...
And he's endorsed it. He's very much behind this.
What do we expect from these authors, though? Of course he's going to endorse it. Well, no, he is.
No, but he's turned around, you know, after many, many Stephen King adaptations and gone, that's whole shit. So he doesn't always throw his weight behind
stuff. I mean, him criticizing The Shining, it's a different landscape these days in terms of Twitter and social media and the way the studios involve the authors. And there was no way, if he didn't like it, he was going to come out and say that. So his endorsement doesn't really do anything for me. I don't think the movie really, it doesn't have that hook for me.
Yeah. It wasn't enough of anything for me to really go, ooh. Yeah. It just, at the moment, maybe it's holding back. It didn't.
That's true.
You know.
McConaughey he looks like he's sleepwalking through this thing. I don't like his look. The kid doesn't look particularly involving.
I thought the script was a little bit contrived.
Well, you've read the script.
No. I mean, from what obviously you hear the dialogue in the trailer, I was just a bit like, that seems a little bit twee.
I don't know who it's credited to, if it's still like, you know, a Kiva's draft or whatever. But I've never really been excited about this project, and I do consider myself a King fan, but I've never read these books.
No, I haven't. I mean, and I don't want to. I want to go into it completely blind.
It's not based on any one book either. It's like an amalgamation of
I understand they've kind of muddied they've muddied the waters, and then obviously the option to then make two or three of these films would be on the table. But I will go and see it, but it's not a film that I'm particularly excited about.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because I was expecting something that would really grab me, you know?
At least this has a relatively modest budget for Sony.
Yeah, it's not huge.
And won't kill them.
So what do you think, sort of box office-wise, we're looking at with a return on that kind of film?
Oh, I don't. I'd have to see, like, what it's going. It's August?
Yeah.
August
I think it's going to be. I think it's going to do okay.
August.
I think
August
it's going to be
fucking
like
wasteland.
I think it's going to be fine, but I don't think it's going to be a, like, oh, that's a runaway success.
Yeah, no, we'll see. It could have legs because August is so weak. all right, let's move it along. Let's talk about Jordan Peele.
Yeah.
Jordan Peele signing an exclusive first look deal with Universal.
Yep.
Which made Get Out, of course. And he is going, it's going to be another like untitled social thriller. He's going to write, direct, produce. His budget is going to multiply by about five. Mm-hmm. So he's moving from about $5 million to $25 million, give or take.
Which is still not a massive budget in Hollywood.
No, it still That's gives him the freedom to go and do what he wants, and they won't really sweat it. You know, I think Boris had the exclusive on this over at The Hollywood Reporter, and he had said, you know, all the studios were chasing Peele.
Yeah.
When a guy makes a movie for $5 million and it has that kind of profit, everybody wants to be in business with him. But Universal convinced him to come back into the fold, staving off Warner Brothers.
He's got such a strong relationship with Universal. And this has not been put out there. This has not been confirmed. It's not even been suggested. But you know I'm a fan of Halloween Horror Nights at Universal.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to put $20 on the table and say that Get Out is going to be one of the mazes this year.
A Get Out maze.
A Get Out maze.
That would be really creepy.
That would work absolutely brilliantly.
Like the sunken place? Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, you could do all sorts of stuff with that. That would be absolutely brilliant. I know they're working on the mazes right now. I'm going to put that, I think, Get Out, because he's got such a strong relationship, and they're actually doing a launch for the Blu-ray next week on the back lot at Universal.
They're having a little garden party. I'm sending my critic there.
Yeah, no, I'm going to attend that next week, and I'm just thinking they are so close to that movie, and that's been such a big success. I think that's what we're going to see as one of the mazes this year.
I would just say my note on this, you know, obviously I was the one who put out the Akira thing that Warner Brothers really wanted Jordan Peele for that. I think it's a good thing that he is resisting going that big blockbuster tentpole route, and he's continuing to do his own thing. I think he took a month after Get Out to sort of see, you know, what do I want to do? Do I want to stay true to this path that I'm trying to blaze and tell these stories that nobody else is really not only trying to tell but able to tell?
Yeah. But it took him 5 years to make Get Out.
Well, sure. Yeah.
You know, he sat on that for 5 years, so it's a long time. So he's not afraid to sit and wait.
Listen, I'm glad he's not directing Akira. I'm glad he's not directing The Flash. I actually think Jordan Peele's Uptown Saturday Night would have been really cool over at Warner Brothers, that remake. If you'd paired like Jordan Peele with Denzel or Will Smith or something. But yeah, more power to him. I am a genre fan. I love horror movies and thrillers, so keep them coming.
So is it going to be Get Out to Get In?
I don't know. I don't even know if we'll see any of the same cast.
But that would be interesting, though, if he does use kind of like the American sequel? Horror Story kind of idea of having the same cast but recast them in different characters. That might be an interesting idea.
Yeah, maybe. I could see that. I mean, he had a great cast in Get Out.
Strong cast. Why not use it again? Really good. So.
All right. Before we talk Guardians, let's real quick just mention this Dick Cheney movie.
Yeah, Dick Pic. I'm still calling it the Dick Pic.
That's what it should be called.
Yeah.
The Dick Pic.
The Dick Pic.
Got dropped by Paramount this week.
It did.
And moved over to Annapurna, which just signed a new 3-year deal with Brad Pitt's company, Plan B. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the movie is sort of coming along with Brad Pitt's company. And I don't know if it's going to be ready in time for the fall. I think that they said that they are shooting for that.
It's going to be quite tight, though.
And the cast is now confirmed. Christian Bale, Amy Adams, Steve Carell. But buried in, I think it was Hollywood Reporter's story. It was either Hollywood Reporter or Variety. I forget. $50 million. $50 million is the budget for this Dick Cheney movie. That is almost double the budget of The Big Short, which, as I explained in my column on the tracking board and here on the show, you know, the week that news broke, maybe that movie made $20 million, you know, when you factor in an expensive awards campaign and all that stuff. And the Dick Cheney movie, I'm just like, this never struck me as a good idea, especially given Paramount's new creative mandate.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised to see them let it go. I do think that it could perform closer to W.
Yes.
Than The Big Short, which had huge movie stars in it. Obviously, this does too with Christian Bale. But Dick Cheney isn't really as well known as George W. Bush.
No, I mean, it's always, I mean, I love watching these political movies. I always have done since I was a kid. But they are a difficult sell to the audience. People don't turn out in their droves. I mean, aside from, say, the likes of JFK, audiences just, they don't. I mean, a lot of people don't engage with politics, full stop. Well,
it's not even that. It's they don't travel. People overseas don't want to go see movies about American politicians.
And as we've discussed, it's increasingly important for the overseas market. We're seeing like an almost 70% overseas yield on these things now. I mean, unless they go down the rather than theatrical, they put it as like a Netflix or an.
That's to me. To me, it strikes me as like an HBO movie, like a game change sort of thing. I just think a young, hungry indie filmmaker would make a Dick Cheney movie for $10 to $20 million. I love Adam McKay.
He's a brilliant filmmaker.
But $50 million for a Dick Cheney movie, man, I'm shocked Annapurna's even doing this one.
I'm assuming that that's going to go mostly on cast, though, rather than. Because visually, there's not. You're not going to see that money on the screen, if you know what I mean.
I mean, I don't know if Christian Bale is getting his, whatever his quote is, $10 million, $15 million.
But also, it's a weird window. I would probably release that in a January. I would.
Yeah, I don't know.
I wouldn't put a going into the holidays kind of window on that.
It remains to be seen if that will be ready in time for this award season. All right, Guardians 2.
Yeah.
Give us, we're going to talk, we can finally talk about what we thought about the movie, because it is now out.
Yeah.
But before we get into our respective takes, give me the box office breakdown.
Okay, so Guardians last night previewed here in the US. Obviously, it opened internationally last weekend. It's taken $17 million on its Thursday, which is fine, which is good. In terms of where that ranks with all the other box office movies from Marvel, Ultron is still biggest previews, 27.6. Then it is Civil War, which is 25. Then it's Avengers, which is 18.7. So this is then in fourth place.
That makes sense, though.
It does
make
sense.
That's still a good showing.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's some really interesting stats, actually. I was looking at a piece online, actually, from Deadline Hollywood, and they were looking at audience reactions to this. It gets 84% on Rotten Tomatoes, which I think is about fine. 72% recommending to friends. But they did some audience research. 58% of the crowd bought tickets because they were fans of the original movie. 53% came because they like Marvel movies, while 40% attended for the cast as a whole. And when it comes to sort of watching again, 30% of Thursday's audience... would like to see the sequel again. 31% would buy it on Blu-ray and 20% want to own it on DVD. So it seems that the audience are enjoying it, but it's not. It doesn't have the pow that the first one had. It seems that people are not engaging with it in the same way. Now, obviously, after we saw the movie, we kind of agreed that it was it's a good movie, but it's not as good as the original, and it's certainly flawed.
Yeah.
We're seeing more people of that opinion sort of come out of the woodwork over mm-hmm. the last week, which is good, because that kind of endorses the way that we're thinking.
It makes me think I'm not crazy.
Yeah, it's nice to know that other people feel the same way. I mean, we're not afraid to obviously express our own opinions, but I think it's going to do... I mean, it is going to do really well. I can see it very easily making $1 billion, but I don't think it's going to have the legs or the excitement that I think the first one had.
In terms of box office? Yeah. I disagree. I mean, the first one opened to 94.
Yeah.
And I think this is going to open to like 150. So I think that...
Like, yeah, I think it's... but I think it's not going to have the legs that the first one had. I think there was a lot of... Because it was an unknown quantity, there was a lot of word of mouth, a lot of people going, we're going to get on board this one. And I think this is going to have the initial... people who really want to go and see it, and I think it's going to do a lot up front, but I think that back end sales, it's going to not be as strong as perhaps the first one.
I'll put it this way. I did some box office contest with the guys from Slash Film yesterday,
okay.
I had to rank what I think will be the top 10 domestic grossers this summer, and I did put Guardians number one. It was a close call between that and Despicable Me 3.
Interesting.
But yeah, I mean, I think the first film made $333 million domestic. I think this one could go as high as $444 and then basically do a 33%.
Oh, yeah, I mean, financially, increase. I think it's going to be a success. I think that's going to be inherent.
That's the case. But I do think it's going to do much better than the first film, even though... from a creative standpoint, I did not enjoy it as much. So what were your problems with the movie? And spoiler alert right now, if you haven't seen Guardians.
Just be aware of this. I mean, I won't do too many spoilers. For me, it was kind of... it felt a little bit like it was a tick sheet of what people liked from the first movie and then make it bigger.
Right.
So it was like...
almost too big.
Yeah, I think that's the problem. I mean, I'm not afraid of a film that goes on an epic scale. I actually really enjoy that. But I just think that they expanded this too much. I think some of the characters, they became a bit too much by the numbers. Where it was like, we like Drax being funny, let's do more Drax. We like Groot, let's have baby Groot, let's have a lot more baby Groot. I love the way that they actually increased the presence of Michael Rooker's character.
Yondu was great.
Yeah.
He was probably my favorite one, which is why I was shocked there was no Funko Pop toy for him.
Like, yeah.
Literally, they have one for everybody, including the...
so good.
Whatever face.
I think Sly Stallone was wasted.
What is he doing?
It could have been anybody. Kurt Russell, for me, was underwhelming.
Yep.
I was really disappointed with that. I thought I like the character. I like where he was in the story. It just didn't pop for me.
I love the opening, though, where he's younger.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Really good. Cool. That, to me, kind of made the fact that he was underwhelming through the rest of the film was... It pained me more. But Chris Pratt, I just kind of felt that he was walking through this.
He has nothing to do in this movie. It's a complete waste.
Weird.
Okay. Guardians 2...
The women I thought were wasted.
I loved Mantis. Loved the addition of Mantis.
Yeah.
I loved Drax and Rocket.
Yep.
I loved Baby Groot, and I loved Yondu.
Yep.
The problem is that none of these people are the leads of the film.
Mm.
The two leads are Star-Lord and Gamora, and they are saddled with this lame family soap opera crap where he, you know... it's trying to, you know, be reunited with his father, and he's angry about his mother, and then Gamora is having a sibling rivalry with her sister. It was nonsense.
Yeah.
All of it was nonsense. It was stupid.
There's also, there's one thing that really appealed about the first film was the use of retro ideas. So things from the 80s, 90s, 70s. That, to me, was hammered home so much in this, whether it's gadgets, references, etc., etc. It just felt ham-fisted. And knowing the work... of James Gunn and how much the cast really feel about this nerdy retro stuff, it just didn't feel like that was their work. It felt like it was shoehorned in from some other angle.
To me, the Guardians of the Galaxy guard the galaxy. Like, I want to just see them, here's a bad guy, here you have to stop the bad guy from taking over the universe or whatever. The end. You know, like, I get what they were going for with the family stuff and trying to make the characters deeper and explore them a little bit more. But I don't think it worked. I don't think it's James Gunn's strength.
By that attempt to make them deeper, I think it actually worked the other way. It just felt... I felt less invested in the characters in this one than I did in the first one. I just didn't have that connection. The action sequence is stunning.
Breathtaking. I love the opening.
Spectacular.
But
again,
scene,
they felt kind of vapid for me. They just...
I love the Yondu one where the
yeah, that's a really good one. But the rest, it just felt like they were kind of... There. I think sometimes you can give too much to me when it comes to effects. I noticed very much in this film, between the bits that were obviously shot on a hard set and the bits that were then in completely computer-generated, for me, they just felt a little bit separate. There wasn't the flow with the first film where it all felt kind of connected. It just felt like, this is what we shot on a set, this is CGI. It just felt a little bit disconnected. It lacked... that element of believability.
All the,
it's not
the
news,
characters
but it's...
go off on their own journey, and it's they're so rarely like a team working together. Everyone, it's, I mean, just like a movie full of subplots, which is, I guess, how people describe The Empire Strikes Back.
But this is always difficult. Obviously, we now know that there's going to be a Guardians 3. We kind of knew that originally, but this is something that's a problem with a lot of franchises, is when you're a bridge movie, when you're the middle child in a franchise, you become that bridge movie. You become... carrying on from the first movie and setting stuff up for the third movie, or in the case of Marvel, other things within the franchise. And I think the attempt to do that has been to the detriment of Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Now, don't get me wrong, I did enjoy it. It's fun, and it's a film that you should see. You will have fun with this movie. It just didn't... It felt like a box ticker for me, rather than something that had the creativity.
It's not a Suicide Squad or a Batman or Superman. It's far from a bad movie. It's just, you know, the first film created these higher expectations, and now the second film has to live with it, and it doesn't meet them.
Well, this is something we discussed after we saw the movie. I mean, this is a thing that Marvel do. The bar is set so high with Marvel movies now that it's difficult to...
To me, it's not a high bar.
I think for this kind of blockbuster, I think certainly with characters and with spectacle, the bar is set pretty high because they tend to deliver. And this, to me, was below that. But, you know, below the bar Marvel movie is still a lot better than a lot of other movies that enter theaters. So, you know, I mean, there's certain things. There's a cameo in this to do with, I won't spoil it, but to do with Star-Lord when he was originally, you know, imagining who his father was. That cameo, I wanted to rip my dick off and hit somebody with it. It was so fucking bad.
The Pac-Man moment, I thought, was
that
bad.
That was bad.
Sorry,
that was
spoilers.
Bad. We all know there's a Howard the Duck appearance in this.
The thing I just wanted to say is that I loved getting out of that screening. People were tweeting about how emotional it was. What a tearjerker of an ending.
Did not get that.
Are you guys fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
You're film critics? Did you see Manchester by the Sea? Was that a tearjerker? Like, I don't understand... I cry at movies all the time. This is not an emotional movie.
It's not an emotional movie.
Give me
For
a
me, it was
break.
Devoid of emotion. The first one, it touched me. But this one, it didn't move me in that way at all.
We're going to move it along because Ant-Man remains the greatest Marvel movie.
Yeah. Ant-Man's fucking brilliant.
Sorry.
It's superb. It but yeah, so.
All right.
I agree with you on that.
You pick what's next.
Okay, let's run through a few things. Okay, I had a couple of scoops this week.
Tell us.
I was on the red carpet for E! News this week.
Ooh,
I know
fancy.
You're a big fan.
I know you just signed a deal with them.
I have signed a deal with E! News.
Look
yes, I
that.
Have. As a producer. so, great bunch of people there. I was on the red carpet at a family event on Sunday, and Jordana Brewster was
Ooh,
one of the people who attended.
I love her.
She's awesome. She's lovely. I've interviewed her many, many times over the franchise. Obviously, she's not in Fate of the Furious, the current film, which is doing amazingly well at the box office. But I did ask her, obviously there's been talk and there's been confirmation of the Rock spin-off with
yep.
Jason Statham. And it kind of made me think, wouldn't it be good, there's so many women in the franchise now, maybe 9 would be good to be a jumping off point for the women of the franchise to make a female strong female in the Furious movie.
And this would be who? Michelle Rodriguez and Jordana Brewster?
Yeah. Come on!
Simon, this is about as good as your John McTiernan
idea. No, but seriously, but no, they've actually had discussions about it.
She doesn't even race Jordana Brewster. Like,
she's going to learn. She's going to learn. But yeah, so they have actually had conversations about the possibility of having a female Fast and the Furious movie.
Have they really had the conversations, or did she just like basically hit Donna Langley on the elbow at a premiere and be like, hey, we should do a female one?
No. Like, Michelle Rodriguez, other people, they have seriously had conversations about maybe we should do this. And you know what? I could be on board with that. It's very testosterone-y. The Fast and Furious thing. That would be good. And also, even though it's doing great guns, I think it would be really good. The female response to the most recent movie has not been as strong as it has to the previous film. So I think that might be good. Come on, Helen Mirren, Charlize Theron. Come on.
You're killing
Jason
me.
Jason Statham in drag. I'm on board with that one.
I don't see this movie happening. Don't rile up the viewers. You're giving them false hope.
I think it's 2020. I think we're going to see it.
Yeah.
Female and the Furious. Also, I had a chat with the... Seriously, I told her that, and she liked the idea. So
okay.
She liked the title. She liked my alliteration.
I hope you get the writing job.
Thank you so much. So also, I spoke to the director of Rings, one of the possibly worst horror films of the year, unfortunately. PG-13. And obviously, he's exec producing The Crow. I know you love The Crow.
Yeah.
Pushing for an R rating with that movie. They're very much going for that. Which, to me, would be kind of a given, but you know how studios can be. They're like, let's maybe make it a bit of a wider audience. But I would be... It's good to know, right?
I think The Crow was always going to be R-rated, buddy. It's an R-rated original... Yeah.
But you know how studios can be. I mean, Rings was originally, when that was touted, that was going to be like the previous two films. That was going to be an R-rated movie.
I just love, like, F. Javier Gutierrez. This dude's not involved in this movie. He's an executive producer. Why? Because he was attached to direct at one point. And then they're saying, listen, we're getting rid of you, but we'll give you an EP credit. This dude is not making decisions, trust me.
But you're happy about it pushing for an R rating, right?
I am happy because the original was an R rating, and I always figured that this one would be too.
Well, then,
Jason
I
Momoa,
will take that as a happy.
Yeah, Jason Momoa would not be a PG-13 crow.
No.
He wouldn't agree to do that.
Forget you, man!
What was the Mike Myers thing you mentioned?
Austin Powers 4. Obviously, Mike Myers is making something of a comeback right now. He's created a new character to front The Gong Show, which is coming back to TV.
That's crazy. That photo of him, I didn't even recognize him.
It's really weird. It's really, really weird.
Yes.
But, I mean, do you know what? I'm actually really happy to have Mike Myers back.
Me too.
I'm genuinely really happy.
I don't care
how
we get him. Exactly. I absolutely
love Mike Myers. So, Austin Powers 4, I mean, it's been a while since the last film came out. What is it, like 12, 13 years? It's well over a decade now.
Too long.
Yeah, too long.
I would have too long, my to friend. See Austin
recently
Powers 4, 5, and 6 already.
I recently rewatched those three movies, and fuck me, they're good.
Yeah.
They are so funny.
The first two. The third one...
It's not as good, but you know what? It's still...
It's better than Zoolander
It's better than a lot of movies that comedy movies that are put in the studios
Austin
right
Powers
now.
Those first two movies are great.
But yeah, so nothing is signed and sealed, but, you know, he'd be interested in doing it. We'll just have to wait and see. I know, having spoken to Jay Roach a couple of months ago, they are having conversations. They have thrown a lot of ideas around. They're not short of ideas about what to do with Austin Powers. So everybody is kind of keen to do it. It's just really a case of making it work, which is good.
Let me ask you this. Do you think Austin Powers could work without Mike Myers? Could they recast Austin Powers?
I don't want someone else as Austin Powers. I want Mike Myers.
Yeah.
Do you know, it's just...
I always wish that there was a Wayne's World 3. They may be too old for it now.
Well, again, I spoke to Penelope Spheris about this a couple of months ago, because it was the 25th anniversary of Wayne's World. And there have been plenty of ideas about what to do with Wayne's World. And basically, the premise would be that it would be Wayne and Garth. It would be they would be in it, but it would be their kids who were the new guys. They'd be effectively YouTubers.
Oh, interesting.
Which would work.
That is interesting.
That would be fun. But I think Wayne's World 2, for me, it was as far as comedy sequels go, it was not great, but it was not shit.
I love Wayne's World 2. That movie gets a bad rap. Same with Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah. It's often overlooked, but I mean, that I'm less interested in than I am an Austin Powers 4.
Where would Bill and Ted 3 fall on that spectrum for you?
Somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
I want to see Bill and Ted 3, but I can't help feeling that it might suck.
Yeah, well, there's just such an imbalance.
But I do want to see
there.
It. Do you know what I mean? I'm very torn with that one.
Yeah.
Also, talking of sequels on reboots, I spoke to John Badham this week.
Ooh.
Yeah. Who's made some, if you think, oh, eh, John Badham, you look at his resume.
He was throwing out some great movies back in the day.
Kick-ass movies. I was talking about the Short Circuit reboot that has been spoken about for many, many years. He will not be involved in it, but he does endorse it. He thinks a reboot would be a really good idea. I love Short Circuit.
Yeah, they were working on a remake.
They've been working on it for a long, long time.
It was Tim Hill. Well, yeah. It's over at the Weinstein Company, you know.
So, but he's behind it. He thinks it's a good idea. I thought he would think it would be a terrible idea, but he's behind it. I mean, Short Circuit 2 was not a great movie. That was not a great movie, and it was also a little bit racist.
Who would you want to voice Johnny Five? Kevin Hart?
Josh Gad.
All right, let's segue.
I thought that would work quite nice. I did have a Kevin Hart segue.
We have Josh Gad segue too.
Kevin Hart on a segue. Where do
That's
we sign?
That's a movie.
Okay,
greenlight it.
Doing it. Yeah, great.
All right, no, we do have Kevin Hart and Josh Gad things. So
we do.
I don't know if I brought this up on the show with Brianne last week.
I don't think so.
I think that I did, and she just hadn't seen the movie, and we moved on real quickly. But Kevin Hart is going to star in a remake of The Great Outdoors.
Yes.
Which I love. It's one of my favorite 80s comedies.
Of all the John Hughes movies, that's probably in the lower end of my favorite John Hughes movies. But I would like... Who would you like to see star opposite Kevin Hart in that? Because obviously it was Aykroyd and Candy in the original.
You want to know? I'm going to throw one out here right now. You ready?
Okay, yeah.
James Corden.
Do you know what? That idea is not shit.
Thank you! Top of my head, right there.
I like that idea.
James Corden and Kevin Hart camping.
Do you see what I was thinking along a similar vine? I was thinking Jimmy Fallon.
That's really weird that we were both thinking of fucking
yeah,
late
it's really weird, isn't it?
Yes.
But I was thinking the other day, I mean, Jimmy Fallon, he hasn't had a huge amount of success in movies. He's done okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it has been a while since he's done a movie. And I'm just thinking, he does have a deal with Universal as well, and I'm assuming this is going to be a Universal, perhaps Paramount. Paramount was originally Great Outdoors.
Was it?
Yeah, I think it was.
I think it's Universal now, but either way.
I know that the
Jimmy,
house from
Jimmy
The Great
Fallon's
Outdoors is on the back
not a great actor. That's the thing. The Taxi and Fever Pitch and... I don't know about that one.
His comedic timing, though, is pretty sweet. For pratfalls, he'd be funny. But I do like James Corden.
I think
that would be really, really good.
I could see Channing Tatum, too.
Channing Tatum would be amazing.
Maybe.
Channing Tatum would be great. Josh Gad, again, I thought Josh Gad originally would be really, really good.
Josh Gad and Kevin Hart? Well, they already did a movie together.
They did.
Speaking of Josh Gad, that little fucking trickster. I love
Damn
Josh
it.
Gad. He took to Twitter this week and dropped a photo of the penguin. Nowadays, when any celebrity puts a photo of a comic book panel, we, the internet... are instructed
we
to kind of
lose ourselves
to assume that is how the casting would be announced.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of discussion this week about Josh Gad maybe as the Penguin in the DC universe.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what movie that would be. Gotham City Sirens or Nightwing or Batgirl or who fucking knows, because there's a million of these movies.
Yeah.
I think it would be great. I love Josh Gad. I think he would make a really good Penguin.
Mm-hmm.
But this is non-news, right?
Yeah. For me, my big concern about Josh Gad in Hollywood right now is he's the new Jack Black. If you need someone who is a little bit chubby, a little bit quirky, a little bit like, can pull faces, he's that guy now, where Jack Black was like 10 years ago. And he's better than that. Josh Gad is amazing.
Yeah,
Don't fall into chubby
actor.
Buddy trap. Because that would be selling himself short. Just saying.
Well, listen, I love the Penguin.
Yeah.
From Batman Returns.
He would be awesome.
And if you
that.
Couldn't, I mean, obviously you're not going to get Danny DeVito. You're going to have to recast. I love that character. And maybe it's just the way Tim Burton designed him. But I think he would be really cool to see on the screen again.
Batman Returns is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
I love that movie so much.
Amazing.
It's so dark. Okay, so Kevin Hart in The Great Outdoors. Let's talk about this. Obviously, this time last week when I was on secret assignment in Hawaii, there was a kind of a shitball festival that kind of collapsed.
Ah, yes, the Fire
On the
Festival.
Same day, yes. On the same day, it was announced that Seth Rogen and the Lonely Island guys are doing a movie that just happens to be about a music festival that turns to shit.
Now, let me ask you, do you think that that was legit?
No, I don't know. I mean, I'm just wondering whether or not they did have the idea before they saw it. Or whether they're on Twitter going like, this sounds like a clusterfuck we can have some really good comedic timing with.
This felt like an elbow to Seth Rogen from everybody else being like, well, we've actually been working on something, so actually don't bother writing about this Fire Festival thing.
Mine, dibs, right. Shotgun.
That's all,
shotgun.
That's honestly what it felt like.
Yeah, I was like, no, were you really?
Mm-hmm.
I don't... I'm gonna call creative bullshit on that one. I think it will happen, and I think there's lots of stuff they could do with it. But I was just like, I'm sorry, I think you've just seen that on Twitter.
I'm like, Lonely Island doing another music-based movie after Popstar, which is great.
I love that movie.
Great movie, but if you haven't seen it, business.
Seriously, if you haven't seen that movie this weekend, do it. Buy it, rent it, stream
it. Yeah, Popstar's
a
fucking blast.
Do not illegally download it.
But like, if you're Lonely Island, how on earth are you making another movie like that?
Michael Bolton's on board. Come on.
Did you see the Michael Bolton like Valentine's Day special on Netflix?
I did not.
It was unwatchable.
Okay.
I'm
not surprised.
He's good for like a 4-minute sketch or something.
Yeah.
To watch a 75-minute special. It was terrifying.
If I'm looking for some sexy time, Michael Bolton is not something
I like the idea
of
the Seth Rogen Lonely Island movie festival that goes horribly wrong.
I mean, I like This Is the End. I like that movie.
Of course, yeah.
But also because it had Backstreet Boys at the end, and I love Backstreet Boys.
Yeah, how random. Who goes to these festivals, though? Like, you couldn't get me, even if it was free, to go to one of these fucking festivals.
A-holes.
Yeah, really. Yeah, I mean, basically, everyone who bought a ticket pretty much deserved what they got.
I'd rather do anything than go to a festival. Yeah, I was going to be gross, but
like a Coachella, like something I know
Coachella.
Is run smoothly and
seriously.
All that stuff.
Coachella is basically a desert full of people that I try to fucking avoid in Los Angeles day in, day out. Having said that, I'm going to Catalina this weekend.
Ooh.
Fucking Catalina wine mixer.
The wine mixer, bro.
Yeah, this weekend. So I'm sure that will be an island of a-holes, but it should be also fun.
Akiva Goldsman.
Yeah.
Remaking Firestarter. This was announced out of the Overlook Film Festival.
Yeah.
Where Akiva's movie Stephanie, a Blumhouse production, debuted. I don't know about Akiva Goldsman. I have mixed thoughts on him, but I like the idea of a Firestarter remake. I think that is absolutely a movie that can be remade and improved upon.
Stephen King adaptations.
Well, King is so hot right now.
It's a strong one. Maybe they're going to do Pet Sematary again, or
Pet Sematary.
Yeah. Edward Furlong's available if they want to. He's still alive, right? just checking.
By the way, I love how closely Edward Furlong is associated with that franchise, even though he was only a number two. It's not like he was the star of Pet Sematary.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, Pet Sematary 2.
He does good twos.
Mary Lambert. Yes, he does.
He does good twos.
He too.
Hey, good work on your number twos, Edward Furlong.
I don't know if it would have to be a little girl or if they could make the Firestarter a little boy, but is there any child actor that you would like to see as the Firestarter?
No. I'll tell you who I would like to see is Ansel Elgort. If you switch it up, make it a guy, and have
he's
him.
He's too old.
Do you think he is?
Yeah.
I fucking loved him in the Carrie remake with Chloe Grace Moretz.
What?
I thought he was fucking brilliant in that. I loved him in that.
Are you fucking kidding
me?
No,
seriously.
Ansel Elgort was brilliant in the Carrie remake.
Yeah. I loved it. Oh, seriously. Man. He was the high point of that movie for me. He made that movie.
Wow.
And Julianne Moore, who I totally fucking love. So
like, in the fall, when you're like, you know, Casey Affleck is brilliant in Manchester by the Sea Part 2 or whatever, I'm going to go back to this Ansel Elgort was brilliant.
I'm not saying it was an Oscar-winning performance. I'm saying in that movie, I fucking loved him. Hey, come on. I love Steve Guttenberg in the Police Academy movies. Doesn't mean that shit should be awarded.
I just think
any gongs.
Backdraft from the early 90s remains the best movie about fire. I am looking forward to Granite Mountain.
You do realize that now BuzzFeed are going to do a 5 fire-based movies that you need to see.
Yeah, like anyone from BuzzFeed could fucking listen to this podcast. Granite Mountain comes out this fall, yeah. Hopefully with Miles Teller. That mm-hmm. could take the mantle. That's supposed to be a pretty great fire movie.
Could be.
A fire starter.
Yeah. Twisted fire starter.
There.
Yeah.
Twisted fire starter.
I'm a fire starter. A twisted fire starter.
Shane Salerno, mm-hmm. who is writing the Avatar sequels with James Cameron, he has been hired to write a Gears of War movie. Simon, I've never played this game.
No.
Why should I care?
I don't care. Quite literally.
Yeah, they've been trying to make games
movies. I've been burnt so many times by games movies that I think could really be so good. Hollywood keeps making them, and I've yet to see one. I'm kind of a sucker for the Resident Evil franchise. Even though...
You are a sucker.
Yeah, I. But the third one, I genuinely love.
Did you see
love.
Assassin's Creed? No, neither did I.
It was on a Thank plane. You. It was on Thank a plane you. To Hawaii, and everyone was like, Assassin's Creed? Yeah, fuck that shit.
No.
Scroll past. No, no.
Yeah, I don't know what
Creed.
Gears of War is even about. What is the story?
There's some war, there's some gears.
Can I interject?
Yes, yeah, yes, of course, please.
Yeah, I've actually played this series. Okay. In my opinion, it's like... it's like for the Brodies of the video game world, where it's kind of like meatless jockeys just going around shooting things in cover, and it's not like extremely smart. So in a sense, I could see how that would work, because it would draw in that crowd and be like, "Yeah, I'll go watch Gears of War." Like all the diehard fans that have like the tattoos of Gears of War and whatnot. It's not that great of a franchise.
Okay, here's what they should do then with Gears of War. It should be basically overweight middle-aged virgins sitting in their basements. They should do it from that angle.
None of this stuff appeals to me. Gears of War, Metal Gear Solid, Call of Duty, Halo.
No,
the only thing I want to see is a Twisted Metal movie.
No, Hollywood.
I would see Twisted Metal and I would see Grand Theft Auto.
It's just, I mean, for me, the ideal kind of gaming movie is what we saw with Tom Cruise is with...
In Edge of Tomorrow?
Yeah, Edge of Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is a great idea of a kind of movie that is a... altered reality video game kind of scenario. Hollywood, for some reason, does not have the ability to make these games into decent movies. I don't know why, because the creativity is there, the technology is there, the ideas are there, but they just can't even engage the audience that they're going for in these
Part
films.
Part of it is I think that the video game companies interject themselves a little bit too much. Like, you know, why haven't we seen a Splinter Cell movie?
Tried to make that with Tom Hardy and they're like Uncharted and all these other ones that they just... But nobody's genuinely excited about it. Even games fans are like, these films are shit.
Yeah, I'm not...
They just can't do it. They should stop with this. But Hollywood persists in making these movies. When your target audience doesn't want to get off their asses and go and see these movies, that should tell you something.
What movie are they not making, Simon? Neil Blomkamp's Alien.
They are not making Alien 5. Yes.
It's dead.
It is dead.
For all
which
those people
is...
who ever thought it was going to happen.
Yeah, but I mean, everybody appears to think that was going to happen. Like, you know, Sigourney Weaver, and I spoke to Michael Biehn last year.
What did
year.
I tell you? What is the number one rule in terms of journalism?
Don't eat yellow snow.
Don't believe actors.
Yes.
They don't know what they're talking about.
But apparently, yeah, so this thing that's been, he's been, you know, tweeting about it and concept art and stuff like that. Apparently Ridley Scott says that there's no script, this is not going to happen, this is dead. And you know what? I think if Alien Covenant does well, which I think it will do, you're seeing it tonight.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't think there's room for that. Even though I would like to see that movie, I don't think we need parallel universes of Alien movies, as much as I would enjoy that.
We never needed this movie. This was this always felt like a social media campaign to like interject yourself into the Alien franchise.
Yeah.
Neil Blomkamp... Give it a rest, bro. Move on. Do something else.
Something that is happening, though, and this is a story that I've actually sat on for about 2 months, the Happy Time Murders.
Yeah, Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah, he's going to star in the lead. She's going to be the detective in this.
I hope this happens, because I've always liked this
They've
premise.
They've been talking
and
to
the
her
idea.
For a long time about
I
this.
Like the idea. I just, I like
yeah.
it. But let's acknowledge the fact that this is one of those movies that seems to get a new star each year, always around Cannes. Trying to drum up international sales and all that bullshit.
Brian Henson believes in this. STX really believe in this. And I think this could, with Melissa McCarthy,
Brian
I think
Henson
could,
believes in this. Of course,
seriously,
he
it's yeah, but it,
he gets to build a whole bunch of puppets.
He's the first
studio.
Guy to admit that, you know, sometimes they will do things that he's like, yeah, great, it's a thing. But this is something, this is a real pet project of his that's been going on for decades.
Yeah, it's been around for a long, long time. I hope it comes together. I think that she is the right fit. Jamie Foxx did not strike me as the right fit.
No. But also, can I just say, if you haven't watched Nobody's, Melissa Carthy's TV show, it is absolute genius. And if you want to know about the inner workings of the Hollywood system, it's a really funny show that really works well with that. So I recommend Nobody's.
We've got about 5 minutes left in the show.
A Bad Mom's Christmas is dropping in November.
Yeah, they got Susan Sarandon, Cheryl Hines, and Christine Baranski.
Yeah.
Now, Susan Sarandon is going to play Catherine Hahn's mom. Mm-hmm. I kind of like that.
Yep.
I can totally see that. Cheryl Hines is going to play Kristen Bell's mom. And I can definitely see that. Christine Baranski is going to play Mila Kunis's mom. And I got to say, I don't see this at all.
But I do love her. She's brilliant.
Sure, she is.
I want to see all of these older ladies just, and this again goes for Melissa McCarthy in Happy Time Murders, just swearing their asses off. Nothing tickles me more than ladies swearing creatively. It's one of the reasons I love Bad Moms.
For your birthday, I'm going to hire a bunch of women just to come approach you at dinner
obscene.
And just yell things at you.
I think it's brilliant. I mean, for the Bad Mom sequel, I would rather of this just being a Bad Mom sequel rather than a holiday movie.
Oh, yeah.
Those, to me...
It's like, Christmas is the Super Bowl for moms. That is not true.
No.
That is not a thing.
No, but to be honest with you, it's ladies swearing and being filthy. I mean, if you haven't seen Bad Moms, there's a scene in that where Mila Kunis, Catherine Hahn, and Kristen Bell basically turn Mila Kunis into a penis, and they replicate masturbating a penis. It's fucking comedy gold.
Comedy gold.
Seriously.
Bad Moms. You heard
it's
it here.
Absolutely,
from Simon
it's
Thompson.
One of the funniest things I've seen in the last 18 months.
A whole bunch of other ridiculous things today on the show.
No, that is true.
Bad Moms, not a good movie. Not a good movie.
Oh, it's funny. I'm not saying it's Oscar-winning material. It's a funny movie.
I'm not saying it's Oscar-winning material either. I'm saying it's not funny. It's not a good movie. And this sequel, God help them.
Yeah. We talked about the Dark Tower trailer earlier. Can I just say, It Comes at Night was another trailer that dropped this week.
Looks dope.
Looks so, so sweet.
Dope as fuck.
But also, let's touch on this. We discussed this before the show started. What is it at the moment with these, on trailers online, there's a pre-roll of a bit of the trailer.
Oh, yeah. They did.
Where did that
Dark
trend
Tower.
Come from, and can we stop it?
So, actually, someone on Twitter who works for Sony responded to me when we were having this discussion, clearly trying to defend the Dark Tower trailer that was going to be coming the next day that featured it. And they were just saying that it doesn't count as a view. Here's what pissed me off about this. I know we only have 2 minutes. It doesn't count as a view unless you watch a certain number of seconds. So let's say that's 5 seconds or 10 seconds, which is why they do the pre-roll before the trailer actually starts.
Right.
So to me, it's all about goosing their numbers rather than actually caring about the people who are going to watch it, because nobody likes this. Who actually enjoys that?
It's jarring. Because you're like,
Right, you click on something, you're supposed to ease your way into a story. Instead it's like, boom, 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 boom. Boom.
Yeah.
And now we start.
It's like, hey! Trailer.
Not a fan. It's just,
I don't like this trend.
Yeah. Care
it
about
grates.
The people who are actually watching these trailers, not the numbers that... And none of these stories even matter anymore when Deadline's like, well, this is the biggest trailer launch, 18 million views in 24 hours. Who fucking cares?
I mean, in the chat, Director Juice Black is saying the pre-roll is to stop you skipping the advert. No, I know what the point is. I'm just saying it's really fucking annoying.
Who would skip the advert? I clicked on the advert to watch it.
Yeah.
So you think if I don't see the money shots in the first 5 seconds, I'm leaving? I don't understand studios. I don't understand people. I don't understand
anything
anymore. It's not a good trend.
Don't do that.
That's basically all the time we have. I'm going to take us in 30 seconds through everything that we missed. Jeremy Renner playing Doc Holliday.
Yeah.
Shia LaBeouf coaching a Down syndrome wrestler in the Peanut Butter Falcon. Craig Johnson, who did Skeleton Twins, is doing The Art of Fielding.
Yep.
That's based on a huge book.
Yep.
Dr. Doolittle moved to avoid Star Wars 9.
Mm-hmm.
Fox and Simon Kinberg picked up Andy Weir's new book, Artemis.
I saw that, yeah.
Brian De Palma got Nikolai Coster-Waldau and Christina Hendricks for his new movie. Mm-hmm. And Liam Hemsworth doing this movie, Killer Man, from the director of Cash Only, which I highly suggest you see.
And Aquaman started filming this week.
Congratulations to Aquaman. That'll do it for Meet the Movie Press this week. Simon, where can the good folks find you?
You can find me on Twitter, at ShowbizSimon, Instagram, at ShowbizSimon. I also have a Facebook page, This Is Simon Thompson.
And I am Jeff Snyder, editor-in-chief of the Tracking Board, tracking-board.com, Twitter and Instagram, at TheInSnyder. Thank you, as always, for watching the Popcorn Talk Network. Make sure to rate, comment, subscribe.
And tell your friends. Spread
tell
the word.
Tell everybody that you know. Write it on bathroom stalls. Guys, you just met... The movie press.
Yeah.
Enjoy Guardians of the Galaxy weekend.
Do go and see it.
Yes.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, Christian Harloff, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.